Look around. Look around. Who are these people sitting here with us? Each person a great mystery, a living example of the existence of miracles here on earth. The person next to us may have problems or possibilities, may be undecided or clear, may feel sleepy or nervous. The person next to us, each person here now, a unique universe of experience, a bringing together of needs and desires, laughter and tears, dread and hope, all seeking to find expression, or perhaps seeking simply a safe space in which to be quietly acknowledged. The person next to us, the person across the room from us, an inexhaustible resource of possibilities, only some of which are being used. The person next to us can never be fully understood, for each of us is more than any description or explanation. So friends, let's look around and delight in each other's presence here this morning as I welcome you all to our Sunday morning worship here at Essex Church. If you are here now, or listening at some time in the future to this service as a podcast, then I welcome us all as part of Kensington Unitarians. Let's take a moment now to acknowledge all those connections amongst us in this room. Connections perhaps forged over many years or still quite new. Connections perhaps of warm hospitality, reaching out to anyone joining us for the first time today. Do join us, all of you. Find a seat. You're welcome. We're acknowledging the connections with one another here in this room and beyond. Our modern lives often emphasize our individuality, our separateness. In the face of all this emphasis on individuality and on separateness, perhaps here on a Sunday morning, we can redress that a little bit and reassert that we are all one, one humanity, one world, one source of love. And our chalice is lit this morning to remind us, through its one simple flame, it reminds us of the one spirit that sparkles within all that exists. May that spirit unite us all, here now, with one another, and beyond these walls, out into a world that yearns for reconnection. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, one and all. I'm moving on now to a story, a Buddhist teaching story called Where's Your Umbrella? You may know this story. He was a Zen master, and it's not easy being a Zen master, or so I'm told. For many disciples came from all parts of Japan to seek his guidance. But he lived in a modest cottage way up in the hills and let those aspiring disciples come to him as they would. And so it was one day that a young man arrived at the master's cottage, a serious young man, serious about his spiritual path. He'd studied much, he'd meditated much, he felt that he was absolutely ready to become that master's right-hand disciple. And it had been raining when he arrived there at the house. The master was seated on a small pillow in his room, and the young man carefully removed his shoes, placed his umbrella outside the door, came in, bowed to the master. "I'd like to become your disciple. I'd like to become enlightened as you are, master." The master smiled. "I've studied much. I feel I'm well on the path to realization," the young man said, growing a little uncomfortable at the silence. And the master smiled with his eyes half closed and nodded. Don't you feel that I could become an awakened one? Asked the youth, becoming exasperated at the silence by now. And the master opened his eyes. The young man now felt hopeful. Surely the master would accept him. And then the master said, Do you know on which side of the door you placed your umbrella, and on which side you placed your shoes? Asked the master quietly. No, stuttered the man, disconcerted. Why? Ah, well, because, answered the master slowly, what you seek is awareness. How can you be aware if you do not even know where you have put your shoes and your umbrella? Now, I don't know about you, but this story is on my list of annoying spiritual teaching stories. And perhaps it annoys me because I don't like its message. Some of you know that I've had a month's sabbatical off work, and one of the main tasks I'd set myself was to clear the clutter that had accumulated on my shelves and in my cupboards. At the bottom of one box in a cupboard, I found a spare car key that had been missing since I moved to London 9 and a bit years ago. So I do know where my umbrella is. I don't know about you. I know where I left my coat, and I am wearing my shoes. But keys are another story altogether. And the answer to all these problems, at least according to Zen Buddhists, is simple. Just pay attention. How annoyingly simple is that? And let's take that thought into our time of prayer and reflection. This is a quiet time in which to turn inwards, to align ourselves with that which we hold to be divine, the God of our hearts and our understanding, the spirit of life and love residing within us, available for us to connect with, to merge with whenever we choose. Let's go deeper now and find that stillness within, a space in which to be. And in that space, I invite you to take a moment to thank those who bring you valuable lessons in life, even if they are not easy lessons to hear sometimes. Let's take a moment to consider how we are in life at this moment. What advice might a good friend give us if they were with us now? Is there something we feel ready to move on from, perhaps? Be that a way of thinking or being? A practical situation, perhaps? What might help us to wake up, to be more aware, to pay better attention? And where is our love needed most right now? Let's take this opportunity to send our loving thoughts and prayers out into the world. And may our presence in this world be a blessing, this day and all days. Amen.
Poet Mary Oliver lived for many years on Cape Cod with the love of her life, the remarkable photographer Molly Malone Cook. When Molly died, Oliver wrote a book about her grief and her love, interspersing her own writings with Molly's photographs. The book, Our World, is part memoir, part deeply moving eulogy to a departed soulmate, part celebration of their love for one another through their individual creative loves. The book ends with this breath-stopping prose poem in which Mary Oliver reflects on never fully knowing even those nearest to us. The Whistler. All of a sudden, she began to whistle. By all of a sudden. I mean, that for more than 30 years, she had not whistled. It was thrilling. At first, I wondered, who was in the house? What stranger? I was upstairs reading, and she was downstairs. As from the throat of a wild and cheerful bird, not caught, but visiting. The sounds warbled and slid and doubled back and larked and soared. Finally, I said, "Is that you? Is that you whistling?" "Yes," she said. "I used to whistle a long time ago. Now I see I can still whistle." And cadence after cadence, she strolled through the house whistling. I know her so well, I think. I thought. Elbow and ankle, mood and desire, anguish and frolic, anger too, and the devotions. And for all that, do we even begin to know each other? Who is this I've been living with for 30 years? This clear, dark, lovely whistler.
Every week, a little group of us meet in the hall here at the church for a Pilates class. Jordan, our teacher, is so committed to our physical well-being that we are now convinced that she spends all the hours she is away from us thinking up ever more subtle exercises in order to reach muscle groups we never knew we had. After each class, I find new parts of my body aching. But we start gently enough, rolling our spines forwards and downwards till we find ourselves with our heads hanging upside down between our knees. And it was in this position, hanging upside down last week, that I spotted the chewing gum. Stuck under a number of our chairs. Now, before you leap up in horror out of your chairs now, fear not, I have removed, hopefully, all of it. I suspect it's been there for a while now, and we'd probably never have known it was there had I not been hanging upside down like a bat. And that is really the message of this morning's address. If you hang upside down from time to time, you'll notice things you might otherwise have missed. You'll get to see life from another angle, another point of view. And for anyone who isn't so keen on trying out strange postures, there are many other ways we humans gain new perspectives in life. Get a new job. fall in love, lose a job, fall out of love, move house, have a special birthday, get ill, get well, retire, join a church, start shopping at a different supermarket, go on holiday, come back from holiday, take on a new hobby, volunteer, go on a journey, big or small. The list is endless. But what these life changes have in common, perhaps, is their ability to shake us up in some way. Our routines are changed. We get to think new thoughts. Life doesn't look quite the way it usually does. And in those moments, we may find ourselves feeling a bit more alive. Like the meditation we followed earlier on about a fresh breeze just gently touching our cheek, there are times and experiences in which we feel awakened, more aware than we usually do. In these times, our regular ways of thinking and feeling, our assumptions and our prejudices, those ruts that most of us fall into in our thinking, more often than we like to imagine perhaps, all of that gets a shake up. Our habitual ways of being benefit from a breath of fresh air from time to time. American Unitarian Universalist James Ishmael Ford is a Zen Buddhist practitioner as well as a UU minister, and he writes of the insights he gains from meditation, a sense of, and I quote, oneness. And it really is just being present to our friends and to ourselves. It means just paying attention when sitting at the computer or changing a nappy or whatever the myriad activities of life may be. Nothing special, and yet it is all there within the universe. And so I sit, he writes, in Zen meditation to help me notice those nothing special moments as they arrive and just how precious they really are. I have a friend, he says, who's taken up Tai Chi for much the same reasons. And I have friends who find Sufi dancing does the trick. And I have other friends who pray, good old-fashioned Jewish and Christian prayer, right to God. Each of us must find our own best way. For Ford, having a regular spiritual practice prepares the ground for new perspectives. And he notes how often a sense of awakening doesn't usually arrive in a nice, neat package when he's sitting quietly in meditation. It arrives at inconvenient moments, in unexpected encounters or unpleasant experiences. He tells the story of being on a meditation retreat, having already broken his toe. Then early in the morning, climbing some stairs, a light bulb blows and he finds himself in darkness. He misjudges the next step and wham, bangs his already broken toe on the top stair. He experiences the new perspective of extreme pain. It wasn't pleasant, but it did wake him up. He wasn't the calm, detached meditator examining his experience. He and the pain were one in that moment, and only later could he reflect on the experience of such pain and understand its ability to soften him to the pain of others, soften his responses to the world all around. Now, one of the conversations I seem to be having most often with people recently is how we cope with the news. How can a spiritually awakened person best deal with the painful news we hear from around our world every day? One way is to withdraw, isn't it? To maintain a distance from the news. And I have every respect for anyone who feels they need to back away from the diet of negativity that is the main output of our news media. But another approach is to stay with the news and with our distress and then start to work away at our perspective. Instead of demonizing the other, the one who has committed the dreadful act, we can attempt to view the world from their point of view. Now, this doesn't mean in any way that we approve of those actions, but it is a tool for understanding. It draws us closer, or potentially closer, to the perpetrators of violence rather than pushing them away. When we imagine the world from another standpoint, we're starting to put into action our Unitarian emphasis on the oneness of all that is. One world, one humanity, one spirit. But let's not imagine that this is an easy stance to take. Forgive me if you find any of these examples painful, if any of them touch on your own life experiences in any way. And don't think that I'm asking us to forgive those who have committed acts of violence, but rather to start an inquiry into what might lead to certain behaviours, certain belief systems. That seems to me the important spiritual task. How can we begin to comprehend, for example, what leads a person to steal a purse from a dying woman, or to plan and carry out a gruesome execution, or to abuse children? What leads people to cheat and lie, to threaten and frighten others? I think we need to try to comprehend other perspectives on life when our natural reaction is to be appalled and outraged. Outrage makes us back away from something that frightens us or that we disapprove of. Seeking another perspective makes us curious, inquiring. It asks, "Tell me more." Now, we humans have a completely understandable tendency to think of us and them, to divide the world up into groups, some of which we belong to, some of which we don't. I truly believe that one of our important spiritual tasks in the 21st century is to work on this divisive thinking and instead develop our ability to see human beings as individuals who together make one species with all our glories and our dreadfulness. Developing our ability to change our perspective is a very useful skill. Moving in and out of focus, stepping to one side perhaps to take a better look, developing our curiosity about this complex existence that we share. On the front of today's order of service is a quote from writer Ursula Le Guin. This is from a marvellous book of hers called The Dispossessed, which is a science fiction utopia, I think you could describe it as. She writes, if you see a whole thing, it seems that it's always beautiful. Planets, lives. But close up, a world's all dirt and rocks. And day to day, life's a hard job. You get tired. You lose the pattern. You need a distance. Words from Ursula Le Guin. And the opposite, of course, is also true. Yes, we can gain new perspectives by stepping back, by viewing the whole from a distance. We can also change perspective by moving in very close, learning to pay attention to the smallest details. It reminds me of William Blake's visionary words, to see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. When Mary Oliver describes hearing her lover of 30 years whistling for the first time, doesn't she speak for all of us? That we all have mysteries yet to reveal and to discover in this beautiful, complex thing called life. This year, let's help one another to find those new perspectives. Amen. And so let us give thanks. Let us give thanks for life itself, for the air we breathe and the earth we rest upon, and for this, our fellowship, which helps us along our way. Amen. Go well and blessed be.